Bienvenue to the Two Chance Podcast, a show dedicated to the belief that you can never have too many bikes in the garage and it's always a good day for a ride. And now, here are the Two Chance.
Welcome to the Two Johns Podcast. I am John.
And I'm also John.
Good to see you, John.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
You're looking tan, fit, ready to go. Even though you might be in James Gum's basement, you're not being held hostage, are you?
I'm putting the lotion in the basket. I have a full house now, so I'm surrounded by cycling clothing and helmets, and I look right, I see chamois cream. I look left, I see wheel bags. I'm in the basement.
I see jerseys. All right, I have a question for you real quick. Is it ever appropriate in your world to cut any portion of the sleeves of your jerseys?
I used to wear sleeveless jerseys. You mean cut the sleeve all the way off or cut
any part of it? It's because, and the reason why I ask is because it's something that I've done recently. I haven't gone full guns out because the sun's out. It's because the jerseys I have super long sleeves.
I like the long short sleeves.
Oh, really? Do you like it? It basically goes to the crease in my elbow. I don't like that.
Those are the capri cut skin. Skin suits, you know, the cyclocross skin suit cut.
Right.
But it's I have one jersey that's like that, and when I wear it, I like it, but I don't. Yeah. I can't show off, you know, the sweet ink. Right. I have that long jersey.
Well, you know, these are Hinkepi jerseys, and there's a stitching. And then the stitching is right, like mid bicep, like right where my guns are the fattest, the biggest, you know?
Yeah. yeah.
And then there's this whole other swath of fabric below that, that has this like rubbery kind of coating. So it sticks to your biceps. And I can't stand this, especially now that we're in the heat of the summer. So scissors come out. Sorry, sponsor.
Well, the extra swath of jersey cuff that's on my jerseys, of course, everybody knows, is a certain flag. So,
oh, right, of course.
Those colors don't run, John.
Of course. I didn't realize I was stepping into this conversation again.
You probably burn flags too, don't you, John?
I had no idea.
Go back to Canada.
That's right. Oh, so anyways, yeah, the whole it's unlike the sock argument, but the sleeves have gotten entirely too long, in my opinion.
Well, the long sleeves, as long as it's a thin, well, here, since I'm in, it's right here, I can show you. Hold on.
All right, so let me describe what's going on. He's going up to the clothing rack and pulling out a jersey, and oh, looks like he's got a jersey from, you know, the jersey extends from first base all the way to third base there.
See, this is a kit that someone gave me. It's like when you buy a Basso. You get into the Familia Basso bikes, and he got a pair of bibs and he got a jersey, and they're way too small for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave them to me, and this jersey does have one of those long sleeves on it,
mm-hmm.
but it's real thin. It's like a nice thin Lycra. It has a little bit of rubbery gripper on the ends, but this is a very comfortable jersey, and it comes down, you know, to like, below my bicep.
Yeah, that's what mine are like, and it bothers me. But that looks like it almost looks like a skin suit material.
It is. It's very thin.
Mm-hmm.
and skin tight.
Anyways, so welcome to the Two Johns podcast, which I've kind of said is a bit of a cycling forensics podcast about the culture of cycling, how you can never have too many bikes in the garage, and other than it being a good, always a good day for a ride, we talk about coffee too.
Speaking of length of things, sensor. No. Speaking of length of things, when I ordered new team kits, I get 4 pairs of bibs, I think, and I went for 2. I'm ready to go longer. I'm looking at Alessandro Valverde. He's an older gentleman, and his bibs are like right above his kneecaps. I did go 2 pairs of bibs with the longer cuff. With the longer, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I want to see what they're like.
Remember that Nair, like, I like short shorts. I like short shorts.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't like them too short.
Whenever I have the opportunity to order short, I order short.
Really?
Yeah, yep.
You like all the thigh.
That's right.
You're a thigh man.
I'm a thigh man.
You like the dark meat.
Yeah, I don't like the whole, like, down to your knee, just above your knees.
Well, I'll see what they're like.
Especially because it's so hot right now. You know, you spend these, you know, you go out in the middle of the day and it's just hot.
I ride in the morning if I can.
Okay. All right. I do have to give Cincinnati credit. This week's issue of The Economist, it definitely gave Cincinnati peas for managing some of their police force.
What? What are you talking? That's a segue.
Yeah, it is.
The Economist, Cincinnati police force.
Yeah, they had a big thing about Midwest policing.
Okay.
So, anyways.
I can't speak to that.
We have all kinds of things to talk about tonight. So, the World Tour is starting to kick back up, where you have big-time bike races. And, of course, it's all leading up to this jam-packed late summer, early fall Tour, Giro, Lombardy, Milan-San Remo, but it kicks off with Strada Bianchi.
This weekend, I think.
Yeah, this weekend. And, it'll just be really interesting to see if this stuff actually goes on. Like, okay, so we're going to kick off. What happens? You know, is it going to be bike racing as normal? I mean, how do you keep people away? Will they have to scrap any of the races? How will it go? Will the racing be different?
Well, just like baseball started and is immediately having trouble.
Yeah.
Tonight, just before we started podcasting, they announced that they are going to start doing 7-inning doubleheader games to get in as many games as possible.
Oh, my gosh. It's like speed baseball. What is it? Doesn't Little League just play 7 innings?
So that's what we were talking about, like combining the Giro Tour, you know, smashing things together.
Mm-hmm.
The Major League Baseball is doing the same kind of thing. And they have something that they do in Little League, they put a man, if a game goes into extra innings, they put the last out from the previous inning on second base. So an automatic base runner.
Okay, so bottom of the seventh.
Excuse me. If it's a regular 9-inning game, mm-hmm. whoever was the last out in the 8th inning, that person goes to second base for the start of the 9th inning. Now for the doubleheaders in the 7-inning games, it'll be the 6th inning guy will go to second base.
So if it's tied in the sixth inning.
If it's a 7-inning game and it's tied in the sixth, in the hopes of it not going into extra innings, they'll put the they'll give you a base runner to start off the seventh inning.
Oh my gosh. Like, if anybody complains about the designated hitter in baseball,
it's all designated hitter now. They've done
way beyond that.
Oh yeah. And so that made me think, okay, so with cycling, what's the equivalent of cycling? You know, like you give somebody a head start, basically, right?
Yeah.
You like pick one person from each team and you give them, you know, a couple minutes head start.
Oh my gosh. And if they can make it to the finish, but they're handicapped. Yeah, it's a handicap.
Mm-hmm.
They basically handicap the end of the... That's really wild. I didn't know that they were doing that.
Well, they just announced the doubleheader thing tonight.
Wow. Huh. Yeah, so sports are starting to go back on. There's already been two MotoGP races, both in the same venue, one weekend after the other. And the racing was incredible. I mean, it was high drama, but there were no fans.
Yeah, I was watching the Spanish race that's going on now. What's his name from Quickstep won today?
Remco Evenepoel.
And he rode away from a group containing Chavez and Yates. And there are no fans, except for at the very, very top. There are a couple of fans on this mountain stage, but there was it, like 15K to go. There's some rider on the front before they hit the climb, riding tempo. And you've probably seen, you know, they're getting down toward the end of the race and someone's at the front and he's taking a drink out of his bottle. And then he holds it straight down and squirts it on the ground to lighten the bottle a little bit because he's not going to drink the whole thing, but he doesn't want to throw it away.
Right.
So he takes a drink out of the bottle, right? His mouth is on the nipple, drinks. Then he holds it. He's at the front of the group, holds it straight down and squeezes it. So the water sprays out and hits the ground. And, you know, they can take all the temperatures they want and wear masks on the sign-in platform. But if that dude has COVID, he's just vaporizing it. I mean, he puts his mouth on the thing, drinks, then sprays it on the ground, and it just – a mist of whatever is in his mouth is just going back through the peloton. Okay,
yeah, that's true. In pretty big droplets.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But the Europeans are doing a much better job, I think, of reducing cases and, you know, being sane about it. You don't see any Americans over there, or many, although I did see like Larry Warbass got over there and a couple other Americans. But as far as I know, you can't go to Europe right now.
Yeah, I think we're on the don't let Americans in kind of thing.
Right. Probably like, yes, finally.
They're Fucci. Don't let them in. Wow. But it will be kind of interesting because, you know, with all the, you know, the whole race yourself into fitness kind of thing, when there hasn't been a whole lot of racing, it's just been training. And who knows, maybe race into fitness isn't a thing anymore.
You know, they look pretty fast. Yeah. It looks normal.
Yeah. Yeah, so with all this compressed racing, it'll be really interesting to see and to see what happens. And also we're having to have riders make choices because you can't do both the Giro and the Vuelta and Lombardy and, you know, all the classics that are now mixed in there. So riders are having to make choices. But it all kicks off this weekend. The big stuff kicks off this weekend with Strada Bianchi.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, the other... I just thought that was worth talking about. But the other big news is more of the clandestine nature of people's Strava, people being starved of seeing whether they got that personal best or got Crown Town or not.
If they're the local hero.
Right.
Yeah. People lost their minds last week because Strava or not Strava, Garmin, which is tied to Strava in some ways. But Garmin went down because of a ransom attack, multi-million dollar ransom.
Yeah, I think that so hackers got in, took control of it, and said, all right, we want $10 million in order to for you to find out, for your users to find out whether you're KOM or not. But I didn't, so reading about this, I didn't know this, but, you know, there's other people that use Garmin data, apparently, other than people who ride bikes. So there's pilots, they use Garmin, and then the FAA requires pilots to log in, and I'm sure the pilot could probably weigh in on this, but we don't have enough memory in our local computer storage.
We need more sponsors to right. do that, more Patreon supporters before we get the pilot on.
Right. That they have to log something on, you know, using their Garmin device or their Garmin, something to do with Garmin's database. And it made me think, you know what? Okay, so when I thought it was just bike racers finding out whether, or bike riders finding out whether they were the KOM or not, $10 million, okay. But if this is something that the FAA requires, I'm like, $10 million bucks? You're shooting kind of low, ransom people.
Well, Garmin was around way before cyclo computers, and people use them for running and cycling. Garmin satellite GPS, that was a thing. I did not know that about the pilots, but I'll go from my perspective because it's all about me anyway. But here's how it affected me. I have a Garmin account, you know, Garmin Connect. I have a Strava account. I have a Ride with GPS account. But I have a Training Peaks account. But it all starts with Garmin, the way I have it set up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do a ride, and I have it so that it will upload to Garmin Connect through my phone, through the Garmin Connect app. And that feeds to Strava, and that feeds to Training Peaks. And it also feeds to my insurance company. You get a discount, you know, if you log your workouts. And you do get a pretty substantial discount, and you get a bucks that you could spend in their their store.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I don't know about this.
Humana has this thing called Go 365, and you can tie it to your – you can – link your Strava to it. There are other platforms that you can link to it. And if you reach certain levels, then they give you discount. I save it's not nothing. And you build up bucks and you can spend them in the Go 365 store.
Like if you get the KOM of Cougar Mill.
No. They don't care about KOMs. They just care about they want you to be healthy. They also want to get all kinds of information on you. So it's a trade-off, but.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the car insurance thing where they track.
Yes,
where
yes.
you put that. Oh, wow. Actually, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, there's probably a sweet spot of health with how much you train and how much you ride your bike that they're like, all right, you're getting a little bit on the
too much
obsessive side.
Well, I don't think they give me enough credit because I don't know how many steps because I don't count my steps, but it seems ludicrous that somebody on their lunch break walking around their office building gets the same amount of points that I do for going out and just killing a Wednesday night trip. Do they know?
Do they know I won the sprint? I won the sprint tomorrow.
They don't know that.
I should get a major discount for that.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So back to the Garmin story. Okay. So, as you know, last week I did this mountain bike thing and I had the map in Garmin Connect and I had very carefully plotted out where my lovely wife was going to meet me and hand me up gels, water bottles, and encouragement at these four different spots along my loop. And I had that map in my Garmin Connect file.
Mm-hmm.
but I hadn't put it on my computer yet. So the map existed in the Garmin Connect world, but not on my computer, my 520 computer head yet. This is literally the day before I was going to do it.
Oh, man.
And I'm doing a loop out in Amish country, gravel roadville, that I don't know this route. I'm going to totally follow my computer to do it. And the Garmin Connect site went down. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this looking at a paper map. I mean, I could, but I found a workaround. Luckily, the Strava was still up. Garmin was down, but Strava was up. And the organization that puts this thing on has the route there. And I pulled it off in a GPX file and just drag and dropped it onto my Garmin,
mm-hmm.
which is the old way of doing things.
Yeah.
You know, like physically plugging your Garmin into your thing, getting the route from Ride with GPS or Map My Ride, putting it into a TCX format or GPX format, dragging it over, all that. You know, that's the way it used to be done.
Gosh.
Garmin Connect, you know, now is all wireless and you can send it from your phone to your computer. So, I mean, these are like
first world problems.
Yeah, first white people bike racer problems. But it sounds ridiculous, but I did. Funny. I was able to do it, John.
Persevered.
I didn't have my little fork and knife, icons on my map. That was the only downside to it.
So let's talk about that. How did it go? You sent me a photo of your setup and you stuck with the aggressive rubber.
Because I had no choice. I didn't, my Kenda small block eights didn't arrive in time. So I had to ride the big fat tires.
Okay. Did you get a flat?
I did not.
Excellent. That's a win.
I added air midway through the ride too.
Okay. Yeah. So how was the route?
It was awesome. This thing is normally a mass start gravel ride in early July, but this year it is a do it on your own, then upload your file, and at any time in July. And then at the end of July, we'll see who did it fastest. And there was a 120-kilometer loop choice, a 200-kilometer loop, and I think about a 45-mile loop you could do too. Mm-hmm. So I did the 120. It was like 71 miles.
71 miles in eastern central Ohio in the summer. Was it a mix of paved, gravel, chunky single track or double track, farm roads?
It was.
How would you describe it?
It was pavement, about 20-30% pavement. Probably the rest was gravel, either pretty well maintained or big loose gravel. I ran into some roads that were being regraded, so it was like soft brown dirt, loamy dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were a couple of sections, and this is mostly where there are huge climbs, of true mountain bike. In a forest area, I don't know if it's a national forest, it might have been a state forest, and one of them in particular, it had rained really hard the day before, and it was a 15-minute push my bike up this hill. It might have been rideable if it hadn't rained the day before, but it were just like big rocks down the middle, steep banks, and it was 11% grade, and I mean, I couldn't ride it, so
wow.
It was a push.
Uh-huh.
So, the mountain bikey sections were pretty cool. And lots of it was like 6,500 feet of elevation.
That's good.
And on the pavement sections, of course, I was like, I wish I had my cross bike. But on the 30 mile per hour plus downhills, I was like, I would kill myself on my cross bike because I could just let it go on the mountain bike.
Yeah, and not really worry about it. And
I was so, yeah, it was nice to have the mountain bike. And on if I had the mountain cross bike, I would have had to push some other hills. Like the mountain bike, I could ride it, but in a super easy gear.
Yeah, yeah, because you're running a double with I forget what's on the back of that, but that's the thing is on a cross bike, you might have kind of steep gearing for some of the more technical uphill stuff. That's just a slog.
Yeah.
So you feel good about your choice of equipment?
Yeah, I was happy that I had the mountain bike. My wife totally saved me. You know, she met me basically every 15 miles.
Uh-huh.
So I only had to ride with one big bottle and food in my back pockets.
Oh,
otherwise,
wow.
I would have had to carry all kinds of stuff with me.
Yeah, you'd have like panniers and stuff. Mm-hmm. Full of food, bananas, orange slices.
But it was good. It's fun doing a, you know, that's the only quote unquote race I've done this year. And might do, so.
What did you think of that kind of format? Because I've done some of those, not that event, but, you know, in North Carolina, we've got a lot of gravel events, and I've been doing those for the last few years. But
I liked it. Liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. And, I mean, the ones I've done have been mass start. It hasn't been the on-your-own thing because it hasn't been during the pandemic. But there's a different, you know, how did you find your pacing? Did you ever find yourself over or under what you think you should have been doing? How did you gauge it?
I gauged it thinking that I knew that it was much hillier the second half of it. So I knew like the hard stuff was in the second half. So I tried to go easier in the first half. But other than looking at Google Earth and looking at the profile, I didn't really know what it was going to be like. So I finished, you know, I rode hard, but I finished thinking, okay, if I could do that again, I would go 10, 15 minutes faster. Cause you just know what's coming up. Like I finished, you know, I went hard, but I didn't empty the tank.
So this wasn't like a time trial effort where you just sort of squeeze the toothpaste out of the tube and then kind of even thing. You were a little bit reserved.
Yeah.
Kind of maybe thinking like, I don't know what's coming up.
Yeah. And I didn't want to get 5 miles from the end and just be cracked.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's cool. I'm glad you liked it.
It was fun. I'd do it again. I'm looking for other stuff to do like that. I know that Michigan Coast to Coast ride is in October. They have it still up.
What's that? Do you go from like
Ludington to you go east to west.
So like Bay City to Ludington or something?
Uh-huh. Something like that. It's 200 miles.
Oh wow. I bet that's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. That'd be cool. Yeah. All right. Well, John, while you were doing something actually pretty advanced, I've had, and you know, talking about Strava and training and actually doing events, I've had a kind of a remedial moment, a remedial understanding. So there was a time when I would actually train, and I trained, with the intent of getting stronger, improving my fitness, you know, getting results in races or being able to help the team, that kind of thing. And I don't really do that. I've switched to just riding for fun. But it doesn't mean I don't ride hard. But what I've found, and I remember when training, you know, I took a very deliberate approach to it. You know, we're having kind of a plan, if you remember Coach's Corner. I worked with Dr. Steve McGregor on, you know, building up and having kind of a progression. But, you know, and I would see other riders who would always, they'd go out and they would, when you'd go on a ride, they would always just ride really hard. And you know what? They never really got, during the season, they never really got much stronger. They never really got much slower. They just kind of stayed there. But when you would have a progressive training plan and build up and increase your intensity, you would get stronger. But what I've had, while I intellectually know that that's all there, going out and just riding for fun, especially when you're just riding the mountain bike a lot, where there's some sections that you can't ride slowly, and you just this is not blaming Strava, but you know, I've got some climbs around that, you know, you're like going up the climb, you're working, and then you're like, oh wow, I've already put this effort in. I'm not necessarily, I could go a bit harder or a lot harder, but wow, I think I'm close to, like, I could beat my PR. Mm-hmm. And then you like start to squeeze a little bit harder and go harder and harder. And it always happens. There's a couple climbs that I do fairly frequently, and I'm like, I always get suckered into it.
Yeah. You know? And then you look, and are you faster?
No, yeah. I'm not faster.
But you feel faster.
But you feel faster, and you think, oh, when I was there, I thought that I was like 4 minutes ahead of where I normally am. But I do that over and over, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's just a little bit of a side story, but stupid Strava, not that I'm blaming it, but yeah, I get sucked into that. But what I've found is it's something I completely knew intellectually, is that if I go out and I ride, like, you have to ride, you have to build. It has to be a sequence or a progression. If you just go out and ride really hard, you tire yourself out, and you don't really build your fitness. And it's not that I'm training for anything, but this is just something. It's interesting to stumble upon that, or to run it against that situation where you realize, wow, I've actually been riding slower, but I feel better. Like, I'm actually getting stronger by riding slower and building up rather than just going out and riding hard all the time.
Well, would you rather be able to ride pretty fast all the time, or build up to super fast at the expense of not riding fast some of the time?
Well, I guess it's all the question of why you're riding. I mean, I think that previously I was riding to do that, to be able to ride, to have a period where I was in tip-top form and, you know, I could do well in races. And then it became this sort of thing that I just like riding. And I can't say that it's not an aerobic workout, or even an anaerobic workout, but that's about all it is. And it's a bit of stress relief, which I think is the case for a lot of people that ride. But it does limit you if you have intent on actually progressing and getting stronger. And it's one of those things that, you know, while I don't have that thing to test it against, it's not like I'm showing up. Like, had I been showing up to race, you know, it would be very obvious. But it's, you know, when you look at stupid Strava, when Garmin isn't hacked, you know, you realize, like, oh wow, you're actually not getting any stronger. You know, mm-hmm. where you had this perceived effort and this perception. Yeah, no, that's not the case. In order for you to do that, you know, you really need to be able to work at this intensity for this period, have that adaptation happen, and then work at the next thing and not go out and go beyond that, because, you know, if you go beyond that too quickly, you're not going to be able to build that system, or you're not going to be able to build that adaptation in your body. Anyway,
well, there's another event coming up in, I guess it's in August. I think you can do it anytime in August. And it's a charity ride that's not happening anymore. So they've said, okay, here's a climb, the DeVu Park climb. Mm-hmm. And whoever can go up fastest gets $500.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So my team, we are all just like scheming, like picking it apart. Okay, who's fastest? You know, the fastest person up it now, I think, is Chris Uberti, who is a pro or was a pro who lived around here. But the rule, I'm not too 100% on the rules. Like,
how do they measure it?
Strava.
Strava, okay.
That's it.
Okay.
So, but my question is, maybe I shouldn't talk about it because we're tipping our strategy. Does it have to be by yourself? Like, it's about a 3.5 minute climb if you want to win it.
Mm-hmm.
So can you like put pacers, you know, at different parts of the hill?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way to do it. I mean, that's if I was going to make an attempt, I'd be like, okay, I want this person for the first ramp until you turn right. Then I want this person for that second stretch. It's not all the way to the observatory lookout. It's just to where the road wise.
So is it from like in Covington, from like the liquor store past?
Yes.
Cork and bottle?
Cork and bottle.
And then you take the right hand turn.
The switchback.
Yeah, okay, I know that climb. All right.
Yeah, it's a good it averages 4%. There's some stretches that go up to 7 or 8%. It's a big ring climb.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta, you know, if you want to go fast up it, you gotta average like 18 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, and already some of my teammates are like, I went out and tested it. I did that, you know, I was 4 minutes doing this. And
Yeah, I remember doing that climb. That's a great climb.
It is.
I like that climb.
But there's a stop sign on it. So Strava, now I guess Strava doesn't care why you're doing it, but the organizers of this thing essentially are encouraging people to break the law.
Yeah. Yeah, to go through the, yeah.
It is an uphill stop sign.
Yeah. Where's the stop sign? Is it at the switchback?
Actually, there are two stop signs. They put a stop sign midway up that ramp because it's a straight, steep part, and cars coming down the hill, I guess, would go too fast, and there are cars parked on both sides, so they're trying to slow people down. So there's a stop, just this random stop sign midway up that thing.
I know. Yeah, that's actually been there, hasn't it? I think that's been there for a long time, the stop sign.
Well, not forever.
Well, not forever, but yeah. Well, that's cool. So three.
And I think there's a stop sign at the turn, too, where you turn right into the park onto the switchback.
Hmm. 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, what's the time period? Like, when do you...
I think August. You can do it in August.
So, whoever is the KOM up the DeVue Park climb gets $500.
Right. And then, so...
Do you have to register?
Wait. Just... Yeah, you do have to register. Okay, so I take that back. So, there is a KOM on it. Chris, I think Uberti has it. And maybe even Stephen Bassett has it, who is a rally guy now. But I guess you don't have to beat them... You just have to beat whoever does it in August.
Oh, I see. Yeah. All right. That makes sense. Let me see here. I'm getting on Strava.com.
I think it's a 1.8 mile effort.
Do you know what it's called?
DeVue Park.
All right.
DeVue Climb. There are a bunch of different segments, but... I think it's 1.8 miles, if I remember correctly. And it's about a 3:34 effort for whoever has the fastest time.
It's hard because it's steep. I always like doing that one.
But once you get around the switchback, it's like 4%, but
you're pinned.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot, I'm doing it wrong. Now I'm looking at people named Covington. So athletes, all right, segments. I need to pick segments.
Are you gonna come do it?
No, see, it always wants me to. Oh, DeVue Loop, here we go. DeVue Warm-Up. All right, we probably shouldn't be talking about it because we're just going to attract people
So that $500 prize.
Yeah, front of DeVu Park. Could that be it? No. Well,
could be.
Jake Bonfield has the KOM.
What's the time?
4:30. Chris Uberti is second at 4:34.
I think that's all the way to the top. The segment that we're doing is not all the way to the observation tower.
Okay. Yeah, this is the front of DeVu Park. It's 1.44 miles, 4% average.
Oh, maybe that is it. Maybe that is it.
You gain 297 feet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any of these people that are on the top 10.
I think one of my teammates is...
Oh, look at that. Jason Carew at 13th. Fantastic.
I think you're looking at the wrong segment, because I think he's sixth place.
Oh, my gosh. Enzo Alwine.
Yep.
Look at that.
Anyway,
yeah. So you can see the trouble that would happen if somebody were to hold Garmin hostage. Well, cool. So what's going on with the OVCX?
Not going on.
It's not going on. So there's no cyclocross racing in the Ohio Valley planned this fall.
Yep.
Did we talk about that already?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. That's sad. That's too bad. So do they have in this this KOM challenge, do they have a separate, is there a payout for the female? The QOM?
What's QO? Oh, Queen. Oh, you trying to get me in trouble, John?
I'm just curious if it's equal payout.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, they would have
category.
To. They would have to. All right, so it looks like...
Send you the registration site.
Okay, this person, Jake, averaged 406 watts.
Okay.
But I don't know how big Jake is. Jake may not be very big. So 406 watts for 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Oh, wait, did I say that was 3 something? No, it's 430. So that's what you're saying. It's different. This goes to the Dries Pavilion.
Yeah, it doesn't go all the way up to the Dries Pavilion.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And the event is the Sunflower Revolution.
Oh, right. So that was the Sunflower Revolution ride that would weave from, and I'm sure it's evolved, but that one was the one that would weave from Loveland. And was it supporting Parkinson's? Parkinson's research, okay.
Okay, so here it is. Ride the Sunflower Rev It Up Strava segment starting from Route 8 to the DeVu Park Overlook. Oh, no, see, this says to the DeVu Park Overlook. Huh. I thought it wasn't. As many times as you want and vie for the coveted KOM and QOM.
Oh, so there you go.
Oh, it's a gift certificate.
$500.
It's a bike shop gift certificate.
What bike shop?
I don't want to advertise them.
Oh, all right.
Because they were a former sponsor of ours.
Ooh, they left.
We left them. Smaller age group awards will also be given. Please be advised, roads may be temporarily closed due to intermittent construction on DeVu Drive. Schedules may vary. Roads are best after 2 p.m. during the week and all day on the weekends. Challenge yourself on limited times. Virtual awards ceremony, September 12th. Age group KOM and QOM medals and swag. Big prizes, $500 gift cards. Oh.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Forget it. Okay, you register for the event, then you join the Sunflower Rev It Up Club on Strava. No, it's, okay, here it is. The challenge segment is located in Covington and climbs from Kentucky Route 8 on Western Avenue to right on DeVue Drive into the park, ending just before the stop sign. It is 1.1 miles long, average gradient 4%, steepest segment 6.5%. Okay, so ride it. It is recommended you narrow your time frame down to this month. You can see, so it's only the people riding it this month that they're going to take the times. You can't see single age groups. Yeah. Okay. So it doesn't go all the way up to Dries Pavilion. It just goes to the stop sign. 1.1 miles.
But you'd have to ride through the stop sign.
Yeah.
You'd have to ride through. You could have it be foiled by some traffic.
Please take a picture of yourself with your bike. This can be uploaded to your Strava file on a desktop by selecting Edit Your Activity.
All right.
I'm not doing that.
What a jip.
Sorry, Mike. Sorry, Michael J. Fox.
So, John, I think that there's one other thing that I have to talk about. And I go through this. I get caught in this all the time. So I set up, and we've talked about, you know, I think I dubbed myself Mr. 60 PSI a little while ago about, because I'm riding 60 PSI, you know, not to be confused with Mr. 60% Bjarne Riis, but I've been riding 60 PSI on my larger volume tires that are, I've been riding slicks on my gravel bike. But you know what? The other day I got on my road bike, and it's so much better for riding. It's a gravel bike, even with decent, you know, nice wheels and nice tires, is not a road bike. It's just not.
A gravel bike, that is profound, John. That is profound. Right. A gravel bike is not a road bike.
A road bike is so much better at doing road bike duties.
Yes.
No matter what.
No matter what. Yes, it is.
So here I am. I'm professing about the obvious. These are my obvious things. If you go out and ride hard all the time, you're not going to get stronger, and you should ride a road bike on the road.
But do you ride 60 PSI on your road bike?
No. No. Okay. I would not, unless I had larger volume tires.
Okay. Noted.
All right. So we don't have an interview this podcast. This will be a break from an interview.
But if you have a person who you would like us to interview, send us an email. I'm sort of disappointed at the lack of listener communication towards us. We communicate with the listener, obviously, but they're not communicating with us. We had a few emails and some Twitters. But I like emails. I like to hear from people.
I agree. I like the emails, and I like the critical questions. Like, inquiring minds want to know. Mm-hmm. And if you have an inquiring mind about some piece of tech or some piece of training or just something that you would like to know in the cycling world, give us a shout, and we'll try and contact whoever that is and get them on the podcast and ask them your question.
Well, so here's a piece of tech and a question. A friend brought over his bike, and he had a broken spoke on his rear wheel. And the rear wheel on this bike, the wheels are FSA. Mm-hmm. And the rear hub and the front hub has three flanges.
Yes.
Three. And the center flange has six spokes, I think, and they're J-bend round spokes. This is in the rear wheel. The outside flanges are straight pull aero spokes. And, you know, as on a normal rear wheel, the drive side spokes are a little bit shorter. It's a straighter line from the hub flange to the rim, and the non-drive are angled a little bit more. But that center flange is just kind of like pulling the wheel in, like tensioning the wheel, I guess. But the center spokes, those J-Ben round center spokes, are massive, big, big spokes. But he broke a non-drive side spoke at the nipple.
Like center non-drive side? Is the center flange non-drive?
No, the center is, I don't know. That's the question. It does, it's not exactly straight. So I replaced the spoke. There are only 8 spokes on the non-drive side.
Okay. How many are in the... Did you say there are 6 in the middle?
I'd have to go look at it. I don't know. They're less than 8, but it has to be an even number. And then I guess there are 8 on the other side. Because, like, I'm trying to true this wheel.
So 8, 6, and 8.
How many is that?
24. So 24, that's a reasonable number of spokes. Was it a V-section rim?
Yeah.
Was it aluminum?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and the nipples are recessed. They have a square bit. I have this Park three-way internal spoke wrench.
Mm-hmm.
And the smallest one is a square head.
Mm-hmm. It's like a nut almost.
It is a nut.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so I'm truing this thing and I was doing it as if it were a normal wheel. But then I'd look at those center spokes. You know, there's a big gap between like pulling the rim this way or pulling it the other way. And then I'm like, I don't want to mess with those centers. I don't know what those do. I don't want to turn any of those.
So those are J-Ben. The center is J-Ben, and I know
Have you ever seen one of these wheels?
I've seen them. I'm conceptually familiar with them, but it's been a while. I mean, I don't think they make those anymore, do they?
I don't know. I don't know why they made them.
There was a period where, and I think that this was, why am I drawing it? The Wheelsmith guy, anyways, I think the Mad Fiber Wheelsmith guy, I think he consulted on that and he wouldn't do an interview with me. I'm actually kind of miffed about that, so.
You don't have to remember his name,
though. I think he was involved in that, and I don't know what it did, and I would love to know the answer to that. I'm not going to say that it's baseless, because I'm sure
it has... If it's such a great idea, why...
Right.
You know?
I don't know if what it did, if it kind of separates the role of the spokes, like that the center spokes stabilize the hub and take control of the torque, and then the other ones handle the side to side. I don't know.
None of the spokes are crossed.
Well, and that would be that would kind of support that. Like if the middle spokes handle the twisting, you know, the torque on the rim or on the hub independent of the rim and resisting that, maybe the other spokes handle the stability. I don't know.
And the front wheel is the same.
Now, that would make more sense if it were a disc wheel. But I'm sure this was a rim brake.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. So what did you do? Did you take the spoke tension of the middle?
I didn't mess with the middle spokes. And I put the new spoke in and trued it. It trued up pretty well.
Huh. What if the middle spokes handle all the vertical true?
It was in round. I didn't even have to. It was just side to side.
Yeah, those are weird. I mean, it's kind of cool to see ideas like that. I remember seeing some of those things. It's like it's alien. You know, the seeing the a middle flange in a wheel is alien. Can you imagine lacing that up? I would imagine you start with the middle.
I guess, yeah, it's like building a ship in a bottle.
Right. Right.
I don't know.
So anyways, I don't know that I have any tech. Oh, the only other tech that I have is that I saw that SRAM has filed a patent for a front derailleur that mounts onto the crank. And it's actually three little doohickeys that seem super complicated and that basically move the chain from the big ring to the little ring, but not via a conventional front derailleur. And it's all wireless.
Wait. It mounts on the crank?
It mounts on the crank, yes.
So it's spinning around and around with the crank?
It's spinning round and round with the crank. It's like three, almost like three motorized tabs that I think move the chain back and forth. Super complicated.
Huh. Yeah, it would have to be wireless electric.
Yeah. Yep. But then I also saw this thing that I think sounds really cool. Aside from the Ceramispeed, you know, drive shaft concept, you know, our bike drivetrains have kind of stayed the same. But this one makes total sense. So who doesn't love a one by setup, right? Like if you're, so when you were racing cross, would you run one by or did you have two chain rings? Okay.
One by.
Would you ever run one by on the road?
When my DI2 battery dies.
Right. So the issue with one by on the road is you have this huge range and you miss some of the incremental steps in between.
Right.
You know, and so if you're riding in a group, you know, it just might be that gap that's uncomfortable. Like you're looking for the 17, but your gears are go from the 20 to the 16 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so somebody has come up with a rear hub design that uses a rear derailleur. It looks conventional. So your 11 or 12 speed drivetrain. You still have a rear derailleur and a cog set, except that it looks like the cassette body. Basically there's a two speed internal hub. So it's like almost like an overdrive. So your 12 mm-hmm. speed, rather than having two gears on the front, you can change that ratio from internally from the rear hub.
Right.
Which okay. seems like a very simple solution to getting rid of a front derailleur. And, right. you know, still going one by, but having the steps that you would have in a two by setup.
Okay.
I'm pretty excited to see if that becomes a thing.
I'd be interested to see how it worked. I'd like to see the schematic of that.
I'll send it to you.
Okay.
And I didn't come up with it. It's just something I saw on the interwebs. But yeah, so I mean, was it Shimano makes the, was it the Delphine that has, I think, 11 speeds as an interior or an internal hub? I mean, of course, we're all familiar.
The roll-off.
Yeah, the roll-off. But we're all familiar with the Sturmey Archer 3-speed.
Well, Shimano makes an 8-speed. Really nice 8-speed.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. They make a 10 or 11 or 12, something like that.
But they're heavy.
Yeah, it's heavy. This is a pretty simple system, and it's fairly light. So.
Well, how about we have dropper posts, right? Hydraulic dropper posts.
We, as in you and me?
Well, they exist.
Okay.
So how about combining a dropper post with on the fly adjustable crank arm lengths?
Wouldn't you?
Because
if
you made your crank arms longer, you have to, you know, raise your seat, right?
But right.
There's some points where you could probably do away with some gears if you could vary the length of your crank arms.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess you could. I think. No. So here's the question. So if you, oh no, I guess it's not. So you shorten your crank arms and then you lower the saddle. You lengthen the crank arms. So if you lengthen the crank arms.
No. You lengthen the crank arms. Your crank arm is longer. You have to lower your saddle. You shorten your crank arm, you raise your saddle.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
But if, and run the risk of scraping your pedals all the time.
Well, you wouldn't do it, you know, in a Criterion or something.
Oh. Does that count as a tech section? A tech segment?
Sure.
Did we just KOM the tech segment?
We have an email with a technical question too.
Okay. Well, why don't we go to our listener feedback? And normally, our interview is brought to you by the wonderful people at Google Composites. So if you would like to go to Google Composites and peruse their wheels and ultimately buy them, there is the Two Johns discount code, which is TWO Johns with an H and the numeral 10. So type that in and you will get 10% off your Google wheels. And now for the full intro into our listener feedback section, John. We take listener feedback every podcast. People can reach us by emailing twojohnspodcast@gmail.com. Or they can reach us via the Twitters or even the Facebooks. But we like to read the emails from twojohnspodcast@gmail.com. And the winner that we select on every podcast gets a pound of coffee from Presta Coffee.
Right. PrestaCoffee.com from Tucson, Arizona. For the emailer of the week. Now we have a Twitter question first, I think, that we should start off with, John. And I'll read it because I don't think you have it. Okay, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Yep.
All right. Recently, I was riding my bike along a country road. Approaching in the distance was a long funeral procession. The vehicles were going 25 to 30 miles per hour and slowly closing. There was nowhere to turn, and my route proceeded to the cemetery. Should I have A, continued to ride normally and allowed the procession to overtake me, B, dropped the hammer and raced the procession to the cemetery, C, dismount and let the procession pass, D, if you choose C, which is the stopping and letting it pass, do you remove your helmet as they pass? I chose C and D, so that's the stopping and then removing the helmet. But I am curious what the two Johns would have done. Thanks as always, and keep up the good work. Signed, the Strava local legend of South Boulevard, a.k.a. the Gentleman Roadie.
Oh, Gentleman Roadie, good to hear from you.
Okay, so yeah, so he's out on a ride, and how he noticed the funeral procession coming, I don't know, but so he said it's slowly approaching him at 25 to 30 miles an hour, so he must have been just like, he must have been nose to the stem if it's not catching him quickly. So there's then the question, what do I do? Do I stop? Do I keep going? If I stop, do I take my helmet off? So he did the stop and take his helmet off. But the question for us is, what would we do?
Oh, what would I see? And I, you know, I'm sure I've actually had this. I'm sure I've actually run across this. I think I've pulled over. I don't think I've taken my helmet off. I don't think anybody in the procession would care if I took my helmet off. The dead person wouldn't care.
Well, a funeral is, but that's, you know, what's the purpose of a funeral? It's not for the dead person. It's for the people to remember them and for yourself to have some closure and to contemplate, you know, the meaning of life. And that could be me kind of thing. So it's not just about, it's, you know, it's about you too, about you caring, if you care.
I wouldn't take my helmet off.
You don't care. Okay.
I wouldn't take my helmet off. There's little bubbles that we all work in.
Okay.
How about you? Now, would you take? Well, it sounds like you would take your arrow helmet off. You would forego your KOM segment. Take me.
Before I answer the question, I will say that I have been a part of two. This is a sad note, but it was a good thing ultimately, I think, because it was what the person wanted. But I've been part of two funerals on a bicycle. I've been part of a funeral procession on a bicycle twice. Two cyclists who died, and our ride was organized to escort the hearse to the cemetery. And I did not take my helmet off until we got to the cemetery.
And you were part of it.
I was not drafting the hearse. I was like, we were like out front. That'd be motor pacing the hearse.
Okay, right.
So John, you have permission to motor pace my hearse.
Okay.
Feel free. Everybody, feel free. Okay, so if I have to be completely 100% honest, I would totally race that funeral procession. I would be like, oh yeah, this would be like motivation. It's such a metaphor. Like you're
outrunning death.
You are. You're totally outrunning death. The Grim Reaper is coming behind you. What better motivation is there to just drop the Watt bomb?
Right. Well, unless you realize that it's the inevitable.
That it's going to catch you?
That it's going to catch you. What do you
mean?
I assumed.
So you're just giving up, John. That's how you're going to be? You're just going to give up. Well, I'm going to die, so I'm just going to give up.
Yep.
It's not inevitable. You got to keep fighting, John.
Do you hear that? That's inevitability.
I'm being honest, and I would say that I would try and hold off that. I'd try and hold off death. I am doing that.
Not being chased down by the hearse.
No, I'm riding away from it.
Yeah. Who knows? The hearse might get stopped by a stoplight.
Oh, yeah.
I know that they normally roll right through those things, but there might be, or a train. There might be a train that doesn't stop for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Assuming that they're, you know, in the place where there are trains.
So I know what the protocol is. You're supposed to stop, pay your respects, take off your helmet. But I'm honestly saying I wouldn't do that if I were by myself. If I was with a bunch of people, I'd be like, come on, guys, let's stop. Come on, feel some respect.
Come on, what would Tugboat do?
Tyler's down.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't. I would. You know, nobody in that procession is gonna be like, you know, that you know, that's, you know what, son, that's honor right there. You see that guy on the bike? He took his hat off. I bet that guy hustles out of the batter's box to first base no matter what.
He runs out every pop fly. Right. All right. Thank you for that question.
Yeah, good question. All right. So, John, I see that we've got five other emails.
Five?
Five, yes.
Well, some of them are follow-ups from last one. We're not reading clarifications.
Which one's clarifications? I don't have clarifications.
Okay.
This is without. So why don't I just start?
Okay, go ahead.
All right. So we have two from the Freewheeling Philosopher. None of them are clarifications. But okay. This one is, Dear to Johns, I'm thrilled to be your questioner of the week. I like that. He doesn't call it feet a questioner of the week. I used to dream of winning Defeat Socks back in the days of old. Coffee sounds great. Thank you. He gives his address.
Which sounds like a joke address.
It does. It may as well be.
It's full of shires and bridges and barns and
Cowbridge. And
I think we're being put
wheelchair.
On. This sounds like a joke. It's a total joke address.
So, but this is the part that gets me is that after his fake address, you wondered on the podcast why on earth I bought the Headshot Cannondale. Well, the frame was hanging up in the local bike co-op, and it was the message on the price tag I couldn't resist. It read, frame, 18 inch, 30 pounds, good luck fixing the Headshock. After a rebuild, the Headshock works great. Holds oil for about 3 months. All the best, the Freewheeling Philosopher. John, have you ever worked on a Headshock?
No. No. It's I don't
this,
want to.
It's this like insert thing. There is no way. Is the Freewheeling Philosopher telling me that he actually is a servicer of the Cannondale Headshock?
With how much oil does it hold? Not much, right?
I don't know. I think it only gives you like 80 millimeters of suspension or something like that. Anyways, you know what, Freewheeling Philosopher? If you are the service center of Malmesbury, Wiltshire, by the cow barn, Cowbridge, you know, more power to you. That's great. But he did send another follow-up, and I think this one may be for reals. And this one is Parts and Holes. Dear Two Johns, I'm sure you agree that it's fun to build a bike up from parts, but I'm wondering whether you have a view about what kinds of parts are suitable starting points. I'll illustrate what I mean using two extremes. Number one, of course, it's fine to start with a frame and build up a bike from that. Number two, on the other hand, it's no good to start with a bottle cage as the starting point because there's nothing to it. A bottle cage doesn't define the character of any bike. So my question is, what kind of component is a suitable starting point to define a whole bike build around? Is a frame the only thing that defines a bike enough to be a starting point? Here's a test case. I bought a French threaded Shimano 600 headset on eBay for no other reason that it seems so rare I ought to buy it. But after it sat in the parts drawer for a year, I started wondering what bike I could build it from it. Was this headset a suitable starting point to define the bike I eventually built? I eagerly await your thoughts, the Freewheeling Philosopher. P.S. The study of parts and holes in philosophy is called mirology. I think this is a great question. And I think that this depends on what kind of wax you use to wax the end of your mustache.
Gosh.
Because I'm sure somebody that waxes the end of their mustache could take something like a head badge and build a bike around a head badge. It just depends on what you're using the bike for.
Well, it's an inspiration. It's muse. I think this speaks to more of an artistic spark.
Yes.
Right. Or a more artistic jumping off point. In the case of a head badge, yeah, you get inspired and you can envision what goes around it.
Or even an esoteric appreciation of the esoteric. And I will go to something very real that you gave me years ago. You gave me a tool that allows you to destroy a perfectly functional nearly universal bottom bracket, in order to install the Mavic beveled bottom bracket.
Yeah, you have that tool?
I have that tool.
I was wondering where that went.
And I think you gave it to me because I have that team issue 1990 Liberia RMO 753 tour bike, as you've seen demonstrated by Charlie Mote and the original frog in the box, Richard Veronk. And that team bike had a full Mavic Grupo.
Right.
And that bottom bracket was a really weird bottom bracket that you had to machine, or at least cut the metal.
Misshape
to destroy, to make it only usable by this one bottom bracket.
People who aren't familiar, picture one of like the drill that they use to drill the chunnel. So it's this big head with sort of a pointed chamfered end, and it just manhandles and just bores a hole into something. So this tool that Mavic came up with looks like a bottom bracket facing tool or a bottom bracket threading tool. It has two big handles and a rod that goes through the center of your bottom bracket shell. But instead of facing or cutting and cleaning threads, it has this cutting blade that removes the first like four or five threads of your bottom bracket. Not recuts them, it removes them. It bevels the end cups of your steel bottom bracket for good, forever and ever. You can never
of JB Weld is gonna allow you to thread a cup back into that.
Yeah, you can never make it a normal bottom bracket shell again once you do this. But and then Mavic has this bottom bracket and the two cups seat down in there. Why did they do that? I don't know why they did that.
I don't either. And I don't know that it was that fantastic of a bottom bracket design. I think it was when I don't know if that bottom bracket used needle bearings or ball bearings. It may have used needle bearings, and it may have taken that, may have said, this was at the time, like if you think about it, shortly after this, Shimano was doing the Durace bottom bracket that had needle bearings on both sides.
So this was a cartridge bottom bracket, so it was kind of an early cartridge bottom bracket, the Mavic.
Yeah, it may have had needle bearings. I don't know. But my guess is it had something to do with carrying the weight or dispersing the weight a little bit, the load a little bit differently than a conventional ball bearing bottom bracket. This actually may have all been the result of Laurent Fignon breaking his bottom bracket in 1983 in Paris-Nice or something like that.
I thought he broke his crank arm.
I think it was a bottom bracket. I think it was a titanium Campy spindle.
Oh, okay.
Which was a very short-lived thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah, would you build... Apparently, you would have to build a bike around that if you used...
You would.
So there you go, freewheeling philosopher. If you are really into esoteric French group sets, you could build up a period-correct and totally unique... and hope you never have to replace any parts, Mavic Grupo on a French-framed bicycle. And that would be appropriate.
What's more rare is a Swiss-threaded frame set.
I don't know. So what's Swiss? So we've got BSA, or the English thread, which is 68 millimeters, and left-hand thread on the drive side.
Okay,
and then you've got Italian thread, which is 70 millimeters and is right-hand thread both sides.
You have Whitworth.
Ooh, what is the Whitworth?
It's another standard. You have Whitworth, that I know of, you have Whitworth, French, Swiss, English, and Italian.
So I learned the hard way that there's a Spanish.
Oh.
Which is a real mix-up of basically English and Italian. So what's Whitworth? I don't know. I'm unfamiliar with Whitworth.
I know it by name only.
Okay.
I'd have to look it up.
So what, John, what would you need to build a bike around? Like, let's say you had a crankset. Would you build a bike around a crankset?
I might build a bike around a saddle. If you had, again, going back to the era of Laurent Fignon, one of those saddles with the little, that you could push back.
Oh, the little butt thing, the Thierry Marie saddle.
I might build one of those.
Yes.
Well, yeah, you would, I might build a bike around that.
Oh, wow. Then you would be down this rabbit hole of esoteric French profiled time trial frames. Prologue specific frames.
There's a Facebook page called Vintage Carbon Nonsense that's pretty entertaining to look at. And these people go deep, deep, deep dive into carbon frames and wheels and different parts.
I'll admit there are some things that I'm naive about. I don't know about, I didn't know that there were different headset standards. Is he trolling us again? I don't know French threaded Shimano. I would imagine
the steer tube has a different thread pitch, right?
So it's the pitch. So it's the threading. It's not like it's reverse. It's not like it's left hand thread or anything.
I don't think so. I've never encountered a left hand thread steer tube.
It wouldn't make any sense, but
no.
So it's just a different pitch. It's like a finer pitch. It's a pitch that doesn't work on certain days and wants to maintain its culture.
Yeah, and has 2 hours off in the afternoon.
Right, it goes on strike all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
next, let's read another email. Let's see, the subject of this one is, how much do you vary your routes? Hi, John, it's great to have you back with regular podcasts. Earlier this year, my wife and I moved to one of the southern Gulf Islands off Vancouver, BC. At most, I could manage a 70-kilometer ride without resorting to intervals on the same road. I thought this would get boring, even when I lived on the mainland. The majority of my cycling was on the same quieter, familiar, and safer routes. While I love being outdoors, riding for me is less about where and more about the simplifying connection of effort and motion. I'm curious how much your regular rides vary. Do you get bored? Do you have go-to routes year-round? Or maybe, like me, it's more about you than where. Vive le Johns, the lone biker.
You know, I may be more like him, and I don't have to have an adventure all the time, but I do like the adventure part of it. But I also like if I ride the same routes, it doesn't bother me that much.
I agree. As a matter of fact, I like the repetition of doing the same thing, because you can just get right into it and know exactly what's coming up. And as you say, you can measure your effort up the same hill over and over again.
Yeah. And you can also see the subtle differences throughout the year.
Yeah. And although I will say, I did go on a ride Sunday with the pilot and Jason, and I went on some roads I haven't been on for a long, 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 long time. The pilot led the route out past Caesars Creek. And oh, yeah. I was like, wow, these are great roads out here. I haven't been on them for a long time.
Yeah, those are pretty cool. You know, John, every ride starts from, I mean, you always have repetition out your front door. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like when I hear stats about, like, oh, the majority of crashes happen within 5 miles of your house. It's like, well, yeah, because every trip you take starts within 5 miles of your house. You know. Your trip may only be 5 miles, and you're 5 miles from your house. So I don't mind riding the same stuff. I mean, you can't travel around all the time. But it is fun to travel places and to ride new roads.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if this really answers this question. I think we just like riding our bikes.
Yeah, so it's more about the ride than the where.
Yeah.
As he said.
All right. So we have two more emails, and so this will be the penultimate email. Stuck through Axel. Dear Two Jones, I committed the unforgivable sin of not greasing the 142x12mm rear through axle on my aluminum 2016 Salsa Warbird, which is aluminum, and now it's stuck in the hub. I can unthread it from the non-drive side of the frame. It actually threads into the derailleur hanger. But turning it further just spins the bearing with no movement of the axle relative to the hub. I've soaked everything as best I can in penetrating oil and tapped as hard as I'm comfortable on the far side axle with a rubber mallet. No result. Short of hitting the axle really hard or destroying the hub and axle with an angle grinder, I'm out of ideas. Any suggestions? Keep up the great podcasting. Sincerely, Stuck in the Middle. So I'm trying to envision this. Stuck in the middle.
I've got it.
You do? You have the mental image, or you have the answer?
I have the mental image, and I have an answer, or I know what I would do.
Okay, what would you do?
So there's essentially a nut on, I think, the drive side. And from the non-drive side, the axle, the aluminum through axle is fixed. And there's like a stud on the drive side with a hex head. And if he can unthread that, which I think he said he did, but then he turns the through axle and it just turns the bearing and everything. I think what I would do is get I'd start off with something wooden, like a dowel or some sort of rod that is smaller in diameter than, what is it, a 12 millimeter? Did he say?
Yeah,
12. So something smaller than 12 millimeters and put it in that end, the drive side end, and have somebody hold the frame, and I would just beat the hell out of it. And you might destroy the bearings in the hub, but you got to get that axle out of there. I wouldn't grind anything at this point. Don't cut or grind or anything like that, because you're going to have to get the axle out of the hub.
So the issue is that the axle, the through axle, we think is fused or corroded with
the inside of the hub.
Yeah, to the inside of the hub. So it actually has nothing to do with the frame.
No. But it would if he starts getting an angle grinder out.
Well, here's what I think. I think that that frame has a replaceable hanger, derailleur hanger. And I think that hanger has the threads. I don't think it has a nut. I think that through axle...
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of the carbon version of it has a nut.
I think the through axle threads into the replaceable hanger.
But he said he backs it off. Let me read this again. I can unthread it from the non-drive side of the frame. It actually threads into the derailleur hanger.
Mm-hmm.
But turning it further just spins the bearing with no movement of axle relative to the hub. So it sounds like he's unthreading it from the derailleur hanger. Like it's back, the threads are backed out.
Okay.
The derailleur hanger.
So the thing's spread out.
So,
and I think the hanger, the fixing
is the hanger
bolt,
on the is it on the inside of the frame or is it on the outside of the frame? I don't have a picture of it in front of me.
If it's on the inside, I don't think it's on the inside. I think it's on the outside.
Okay.
I think he's going to have... Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a rubber mallet or a wooden mallet.
Well, a piece of wood, a dowel or something, and any kind of mallet, and just start banging on
it. Just start banging on it.
And, you know, it says you tried penetrating oil, but put the bike on its side and just douse it. And you can get, what's that anti-seize stuff we have used in the shop? It has a purple label. And I've gotten aluminum seat posts out of frames with this. Oh, shoot.
Do you think...
It has a purple label. Because the aluminum on aluminum, like, oxidizes.
Yeah.
And fuses together. I would try more stuff. I'd squirt more juice in there and let it sit. And just wail on it. You might destroy the hanger, and you're probably most definitely going to destroy the through axle, because the ends that you're pounding on is threaded. But I think you can get it out.
I think that this goes in stages, John. I think you start with the pounding. First, there's the pounding. Mm-hmm. Don't do this over many, many beers. Do this with a clear mind. First, there's the pounding. If the pounding doesn't work, I think you... So you know that the outer diameter of that through axle is 12 millimeters. Get a drill bit. And I think that you... There's two ways you could do this. You could either...
How are you going to, if you start drilling it, the hub's just going to spin. How are you going to hold the hub still? Not the hub, but the axle of the hub.
My guess is he has like one of those, I'm making the assumption that he has a DT that like kind of quick release, that it's not really a quick release.
Yeah. It's just you pull it out and rotate it.
Yeah. My guess is that's the skewer he has. Otherwise, you could just put in whether it's a 5 or a 6 millimeter Allen, and you would hold it while you would drill it out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So he can hold that part.
Yeah, and it'll center itself. Your bit will center itself if you start from, because it's hollow. The skewer is hollow. The through axle is hollow.
You got to have a very steady hand to not start to drill into your hub.
Okay, then use the next size down, because, you know, you don't have to get it like right on. You don't have to remove all the material. You could weave a little bit of the material, the outer material, the through axle, but by weakening it, by drilling it, you'll get it out. I think that if you use heat, I think you'll...
That's the other thing. You can use heat, but you're gonna
mar up the finish.
Paint. Yeah. You're gonna melt all the rubber parts in your hub.
Yeah. So that's why I think you either, or the other thing is, if you're really good with a saw, you cut the wheel out and then pound out that axle once it's free from the frame.
But I think it's easier to pound it out in the frame because the frame is holding it all steady.
If you can't pound it out in the frame. that's what I think. If you can't pound it out in the frame, you cut the wheel out. But I would first try using a drill.
I should say second,
if the wooden mallet and just pounding it. Because how badly could it be fused in there?
Can be in there, but I think you can get it out without drilling. Use the anti-seize. If I could find the name of it.
Not the dry slide.
No.
Seafoam.
Oh, that's I wonder if you could make. Well, you'd have to destroy the other end of the through axle. Make some kind of slide hammer.
Well, that's a good point.
I'm looking up anti-seize, and it's autofilling anti-seizure.
Or, you know what? Actually, John, you know what I would do? Is I have another idea. Get a bolt. Almost like a lag bolt.
Yeah.
Get a lag bolt.
And thread that in, and you can hammer on that.
Well, I would get a lag bolt that's smaller than the inner diameter of the dropout. So that it fits in, but still shoulders up against the through axle.
Yep. And then hit that.
Hit that, but you'll want to brace the non-drive side seat stay, chain stay.
Yep.
You'll get it out that way.
Yep. And destroy your through axle, but it's already destroyed.
It's already destroyed.
Is this it? Blaster petroleum-based penetrant aerosol can Granger supply. I think that's it. Anti-seize. Yeah, there's this stuff. Here's something. Blaster petroleum-based penetrant. And you get it at Granger. Loctite makes some products, too.
So he soaked it already.
Well, he says he did.
I don't know. Do you think that would heat do it? Would heat help that? I don't know that heat would help it.
Because it's aluminum, it wouldn't help as much.
Yeah.
Get some product. Get some miracle product. And then get a big hammer.
Yeah. And I think that if I were to use the lag bolt that was a smaller diameter, I would not use a rubber mallet. I would use a hammer. I would use a sledge. Metal hammer.
Yep. Okay. Let's see. Last email. Cross-country query. A cross-country query. Bonjour, bon monsieur Jean and John. My wife and I are preparing to move across country from LA to Atlanta. We want to make this fun, so we're not planning to drive straight across. So far, I have stops planned in St. George, Utah, Grand Junction, and Denver, Colorado. I've never driven east of Denver, so I'm unsure where else we should go. If you two were to plan a cross-country drive with stops to hike and ride, where are some of the places you wouldn't want to miss? Love the podcast and was happy to see it return. Signed, the Southern Angelino.
So he's stopping. Southern Angelino is stopping in St. George. I mean, the two places he said, St. George, three places, St. George, Grand Junction, and Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Does that tell you anything? Or what does that tell you?
That he's taking the northern route?
Yes.
The central route?
Yes. So he's going on...
All those 70. Places have legal weed?
So St. George, which is really a couple hours outside of Vegas, which I've ridden in St. George, but I've ridden a mountain bike in St. George, is the Angelino riding mountain bike, or is he riding a road bike?
He doesn't say anything about riding. Oh, he does, to hike and ride.
Yeah, I think the spots that he's mentioned makes me think he's riding a mountain bike. So okay. Grand Junction, there's a lot of mountain biking. St. George, there's a lot of mountain biking. Denver, there's some mountain biking. There's a lot just west of Denver. And then continuing on his cross-country voyage on 70, he will go through Topeka. Or Salina, Kansas, Topeka, Kansas City, St. Louis, maybe Nashville, Chattanooga, all the way down to the ATL.
So where else should he stop?
If he's on a mountain bike, which I'm assuming, so he should definitely stop in the wonderful... and this isn't far from Atlanta, but the Pisgah Forest is a great place to mountain bike. I'm assuming he's mountain biking.
Mm-hmm.
So of course it's a little bit of a Homer promo for me, but that's a great place. I don't really know about a whole lot of places. I mean, Chattanooga has great places to ride, even on the road. I mean, I've ridden the road bike around Chattanooga. It's great. You've got, what is that, Lookout Mountain there?
Well, where is he going to veer down to Atlanta? See, he's probably going to get to St. Louis and then start heading south, right? He's not going to go all the way to Indianapolis and then head south.
Right. I think he'll get, I think you're right. I think he'll go to St. Louis and...
Well, here, if he can stay on 70, and I know it takes him out of his way north a little bit, but just south of Interstate 70 is Bloomington, Indiana, and just north of Bloomington is Brown County State Park, and that is an excellent place to stay and do some mountain biking.
Yes.
And so then you could get to Indianapolis and then just head south on 65 and then you're back on your route to go to Atlanta.
Does the Hilly 100 still happen?
It's in the fall, so unknown at this point.
Okay. But it's still going on. Like a
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that goes through Brown Mountain, or Brown County State Park, doesn't it?
Go not through the state park, but is in Brown County.
It's in that area. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are great roads. Like, even if he's on a road bike, those are great roads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a big country we live in. I haven't ridden in a lot of those places that he's going through. I mean, maybe done criteriums or something like that, but that's different. Any place in the bluegrass, central bluegrass state, will be great for riding.
Kentucky.
Which you could go through.
There's lots of very good mountain biking. If when you get to St. Louis, you go head towards Louisville, lots of good mountain biking. Well, you will, if you get to St. Louis and you start... and you veer down on 64, you go just south of Bloomington, and you're in Hoosier National Forest before you get to Louisville, and their mountain biking there is excellent.
Is that's near Evansville and probably north of Owensboro?
Yeah, it's north of Evansville, French Lick, Indiana.
Oh, hometown of Larry Bird.
That sounds like a good trip.
Yeah, you know what, here's actually what you should do, and I'm assuming that he's riding mountain bikes. If you are looking for trails, there's an app you can download on your phone called Trail Forks. It has all the trails that I can think of that you would want to ride if you're not familiar with the area. You have description, you have a map that'll, you know, put your position where you are on the trail, what direction you're going. You'll have recent reviews of the trails by people who have ridden them, if it's been ridden, and a good description of the trail. So if you're looking for stuff, if our answers aren't really sufficient with your schedule, or you need some infill things, download Trail Forks and that's a great tool for you to use.
And that's for mountain bike and hiking, or just mountain biking?
It's mountain biking, it's hiking. There's all kinds of they have a number of different pull downs of what you what activity you're doing, and it filters out trails are available. It's a great app. It's very similar to one that was, I think there was the Hiking Project or the Mountain Bike Project. I think Trail Forks is, you know, it seems like Trail Forks is the one that kind of has aggregated all that stuff together.
I'm downloading it now.
So there you go. Southern Angelino, download Trail Forks. All the information you need. Even though I would love to be able to tell you everything about it, that has more information. It's basically the cumulative brain.
Got it. All right. What else do we have, John?
That's all I've got as far as emails.
Okay. So you know what that means.
That means we need to pick one. And let's see here. So it's between The Lone Biker, Freewheeling Philosopher, Stuck Through Axel, and I guess that's it. Wait a minute. Where'd the one?
We had the funeral procession.
Oh, the funeral procession. I'm actually going to go with the funeral procession. I would have gone with Stuck in the Middle, but I don't know if drinking coffee while he's trying to do this is the best thing.
Mm-hmm. I like the funeral procession too.
Yeah, I think that's a great question.
Because it is it's a real question, but it's also a metaphor for life.
It's pretty deep.
It is deep. So that was from the Gentleman Roadie.
Oh my gosh, the Gentleman Roadie. Where did he say? Did he say South Boulevard?
He said. Let's see. He said the legend of South Boulevard.
The legend of South Boulevard. Nice. And right. I do have to credit the Gentleman Roadie for some pretty good. He's in the annals of Two John's podcast listener feedback. The Gentleman Roadie has been a major contributor. He's up there with the likes of Fun Run Robbie, Alva, and the
Rasta Roadie.
The Rasta Roadie, who hope Steven is doing well. So, yeah. Gentleman Roadie, thanks. And send us your information. We'll get you some delicious Presta coffee.
We will. Okay.
That's all I've got. You still healthy, John?
Still feeling good. That's out running good. That Hurst.
That's good. Oh.
Right. All right, so everybody send us some feedback, send us some questions, let us know how you are doing. We hope you're doing well. We would like to thank, we had a few new Patreon supporters sign up since the last podcast. And, of course, we need you Patreoners because we have hosting expenses, Podomatic expenses. My son is selecting a proper microphone for me, which I will buy soon. Who was it?
Mo expenses.
Yeah, all the money. Jamie became our newest Patreon supporter, Jamie BG. So thank you, Jamie.
Awesome. Thank you. So, John, I have one thought to leave you with. So we've been talking about Strava and the Garmin issue and... You know, and I think I talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Rocky III and the theme song to Rocky III, Eye of the Tiger, and the line in there about not trading your passion for glory.
Which I had a totally different take on than you did.
But you know what? I know some people that have a weird relationship with Strava. And today I was listening to the Beatles song. The Beatles song sung by Paul McCartney called Yesterday.
I've heard of it.
You've heard of this? Okay.
Yeah.
So it makes me think, I was like, you know what? This could be like the people I know that have an issue with Strava because of it reminds them of them past of their past selves.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday, I was listening to the song. I was like, you know what? This song could be about people who have those problems with yesterday and,
yeah.
And Strava.
Right. Strava is nothing but trouble. You can never be who you were. You are only who you are. And worrying about the past is just going to bring you sorrow, John.
I don't know that I believe in yesterday. And I think I'm better for it.
Yeah, I think you are too. And who wants a $500 bike shop gift certificate anyway? Not me.
Right. What a jip. Oh, so on that thought, John, thank you for joining me on the podcast. It's good to see you, and stay cool.
Yep, thanks everybody for listening.
Yo, you have been listening to the podcast. Want more of them? Follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/podcast. Or send us an email. Mm-hmm. Talk about. Enjoy your ride.
Oh, yeah.
Be safe. Get a real. Oh. And if you ride with us, please don't be a happy one.
TWOJOHNS.
Peace. And we out.